Blog Talk Radio.
BangTheBook.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition here of the Gridiron Gambling Report, BangTheBook.com's NFL betting podcast. I'm your host, Adam Burke. Joining me, as always, BangTheBook.com writer, personality, and football aficionado, Mr. Cole Ryan. Cole, how's it going today, buddy?
Things are going excellent, as always, my friend. Thank you for once again joining me for what should be another great day of talking about football. And there's one thing for sure, I'm doing much better than Geno Smith today.
That's true. I was going to say, I haven't been sucker punched yet today, so it's probably a good thing. You know, I'm still able to do the show here, and obviously that's where we'll begin the show once we get into it. We got a lot of things to discuss today. We're going to talk about some of the newsworthy things as we enter what's essentially the first week of the preseason. We actually have lines to talk about this week, which is exciting. We'll talk about some key handicapping topics before we get into some game breakdowns, and then also sort of tease at the end of the show a contest that both Cole and I are a part of that we absolutely love. It's a very, very fun event, and I'll talk more about that at the end of the show. But first things first, Cole, I guess there's no better place to start than the breaking news that broke, what, about an hour and a half before we got on the air here. New York Jets quarterback Geno Smith, sucker punched in the locker room. Not even going to bother trying to butcher the sixth-round linebacker who punched him in the face. But what an awful situation for the Jets before they even play their first preseason game.
No, and you know what? There's no need to even butcher his name because the Jets immediately cut him. So it was funny that, you know, Geno Smith was cut or punched, then they cut the guy who punched him. And you're right. It's almost typical New York stuff we talk about all the time. They always seem to have something going on. Part of me, however, wants to believe if there's such thing as a silver lining, that there could be the fact that Bryce Petty will see more playing time, at least in the preseason. Of course, Ryan Fitzpatrick now will definitely be the starter. They'll pick somebody up, I'm sure, to add to the mess. But it just shows you, and you actually, I have to give you a little bit of credit, because you actually hinted to the fact that there could be some disruption in the locker room, and we don't know exactly what brought the fight about and who did what. You know, we're getting, you put a finger in somebody's face, at least that's what I'm reading up to this point. But it could go back to that coaching scenario you talked about. But I think overall this might actually be good, at least early going for the Jets. Now, the problem, of course, will be when Geno's ready to come back, and you have to think about where they are at that point, because either they're winning with Fitzpatrick and they're thinking about keeping him under the center, or they're losing so badly you might as well go to Petty at that point. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds in New York like it seems to be every year.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that there are some things that the Jets can build on from this. I mean, obviously it's not a good thing, you know, that Geno Smith is out because he was expected to be the starting quarterback. But, you know, there are a lot of people, and there are some analysts out there, some of the numbers people when it pertains to football, that believe that this team is better off with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback. Last week, you and I sort of had this discussion, you know, and I kind of figured that, you know, they probably would be better off with Fitzpatrick, probably down the line better with Bryce Petty, although the training camp reports on Petty so far haven't been all that great. But, you know, how about this for Todd Bowles? You know, a rookie head coach here. He's got the Sheldon Richardson thing to deal with, and then now this. And, you know, on one hand, this is something that can sort of unite the team. But on another hand, you know, Chan Gailey gave Geno Smith a huge vote of confidence before training camp even began. And, you know, now they're already onto Fitzpatrick. And as you emailed me before the show, now they have to go out and look around and see who gets cut from other training camps to get some depth at this position.
Oh, absolutely. Look, it is definitely a baptism by fire for a rookie coach who's still getting his legs, so to speak, as a head coach. Now, the good news is Fitzpatrick is really a capable backup. Why, he's probably not going to wow anyone. He's a smart quarterback. If they can have the kind of defense, which is yet to be seen, that Bowles really wants to have, he can be the kind of quarterback that can manage the game and even carry them at times if needed. But I think you're right. The media circus, not only around this and what's going on, is definitely going to be a tough test for this team, not only as a whole, but from a head coaching standpoint, which to me is the biggest thing, because he's really wanting to worry about everything on the field, but now he's faced with thinking about things that are off the field. And, of course, you and I talked before this, and I want to bring up that Chris Carter, I don't know if you've heard or seen, but it's blown up Twitter too, came out and said it's a lack of leadership on Geno Smith's part that he would put himself in harm's way to get a sucker punch. And, of course, he's getting beat up for that kind of thing. But I actually think he's right. And to me, I thought about that when Cam Newton was in a fight in training camp. I get it, people talk, but if you're a quarterback and especially a leader of the team, you don't want to get in these situations. So, again, I think it's probably bad for the coaching situation because he's got to deal with a lot of stuff off the field. But I think from a player personnel standpoint, it's really not – it could be worse because they do have a capable backup in Fitzpatrick. Hopefully it's a learning lesson for Geno Smith. Now, that may change down the road, and I noticed the odds for the Jets, which were high anyway, are still sitting around 70-1 or a little bit higher. So I don't think that's going to be much of a difference because I'm not sure too many people outside of New York are willing to put money on the Jets to do anything well this year. But very interesting to watch this unfold. Again, a team that should be mediocre will be one to watch already this year.
Well, to look at this long-term and see the long-term ramifications of it, the Jets, their season win total has gone from 7.5 down to 7. In week one against the Browns, they've gone from 3.5, from -3.5 to -3. But for the short-term ramifications here, let's go ahead and get into one of our game breakdowns for this week. And we're looking at the Jets and Lions. This was one that I ironically had on our card beforehand to talk about, due in large part to this whole quarterback situation with the Jets. Now it comes to the forefront, especially in this preseason game. We've seen a small adjustment on the Lions up to 3.5 here. And I think the big reason why is because Bryce Petty struggled in training camp so far, and now he's going to get the bulk of the playing time this week and, you know, likely over the next couple of weeks. Well, at least into week two, you know, week three, generally the dress rehearsal. But, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, not 100% in camp right now. So, you know, you're going to get a steady dose of Bryce Petty in this one against a Lions team that, you know, has a much more proven backup quarterback, or third-string quarterback, I should say, in Kellen Moore.
Oh, absolutely. And to me, you bring up a very good point. Quarterback rotation is huge in preseason because that's really when you're going to have your money on the line in the fourth quarter, so you want to know who you're going to have under center, and you want to know if it's going to be a rookie, in this case, who's struggling, or it's going to be a guy that's at least played a few seasons and at least might be familiar with the playbook, might be familiar with the scenarios that each team has been running. To me, a few things stood out to me in this game. Obviously, Geno Smith was going to be one of them before he got hurt. But, you know, to me now, it's bold. We talked about our rookie head coaches in preseason. We're 7-1 last season, which is basically Gruden and Zimmer. And Zimmer already got off to a win in week one. So, to me, I would think, although it will be harder to prepare with the game coming shortly, this almost becomes a more important game to both try to come out and win, at least to try to make a point for his team that even though they have this big problem, they still have a chance to win, although in preseason, but it's going to be extremely, extremely difficult. And I think I was leaning Lions if I were going to bet on a preseason game before this news, and I'm definitely leaning Lions now.
Yeah, I was definitely leaning Lions as well. I think that this sort of makes you look at the under as well a little bit harder because, you know, Fitzpatrick is a guy that has some throwing chops, certainly, but this was a Jets team that was probably going to run the football quite a bit anyway. You know, they did pick up Brandon Marshall in the offseason, so you know, maybe they're going to throw a little bit more to him. But you know, ultimately, I think that if you're Bowles, you know, I think the game plan entering this one was to be a physical team, was to run the football. And I think now that gets magnified even more. You know, because if Penny's been struggling in training camp, the last thing you want to do is hurt his confidence by have him drop back too much, maybe throw a couple of picks, you know, miss some wide open guys, because as it stands right now, he's your backup quarterback. And that probably won't be the case when we get to week one. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to bury this kid in his first training camp. So I think the Jets have a very, very vanilla game plan in this one. And I think the Lions have a lot more flexibility because Kellen Moore has put up some numbers in preseason games, you know, and there's just a higher level of confidence there between coach and player. And like you say, you know, that's really what you have to look at in these preseason games is who's going to be out there deciding your bet. And in this case, I'd be much more inclined to take Kellen Moore than Bryce Petty.
Well, and I'm going to be watching a few other things too. What I really want to see is Ameer Abdullah running back for the Lions. Had a great camp. He seems like it's a perfect fit. Offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi loves stretch play. He loves to run. But they're also going to use a power scheme. But as we all know, the Lions like to get the running backs involved, which is what they tried to do with Reggie Bush. No team leaned more heavily on the running back in the passing game last year than the Lions, with 28.3% of all targeted passes to running backs. So I'd like to see him, obviously, later in the game playing. And also, what I really want to watch is play calling. People who watched the first preseason game noticed it. Going forward on some fourth and shorts in the opposition's territory. Plus, we have a longer extra point now. The NFL moved the kick attempt back to the 15-yard line this offseason, which basically makes it about a 33-yard point after try. But now with a two-pointer, two-yard conversion going on, a lot of things could change. Lions coach Caldwell, he came out and said, look, I'm sure there's going to be some teams that we play against, and we may be one of them that decide to go for two every single time. So with the point differential, you're going to have to be good at that particular execution of the two-point play. To me, that means he could really want to work on the execution of the two-point play in preseason. So that'll be something interesting to watch, too, because it could really affect the total in these games.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up about the chains with the extra point. It's something you're going to have to keep in mind during the regular season. You know, you may get some of these more aggressive coaches, you know, some of these teams that have better skill position talent, you know, taking a shot at going for two. You know, I'm thinking about teams like the Broncos, like the Colts, obviously the Packers. You know, there was an article I just saw a couple days ago about Mike McCarthy on the frequency with which he'll go for two as opposed to kicking the extra point. And, you know, he kind of downplayed it. But at the same time, you read between the lines and, you know, the Packers are probably a team that, you know, may gamble more often than not. And frankly, when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback, you know, why the hell not? So, you know, obviously we sort of had to deviate a little bit with the show format here with the Geno Smith news to kick off the show. But, you know, what other noteworthy things do you want to discuss here?
Oh, wow. Well, I have plenty, but I'd like to start with Alden Smith, of course, of the 49ers, at least not anymore. He used to be. But he got in trouble once again, arrest for vandalism, hit and run, DUI, raises issues, basically not only under the substance abuse policy, but the personal conduct policy. He was suspended 9 games last year under both of those policies, so there's going to be a lot to happen with that, not only from a legal standpoint, but from, you know, what Roger Goodell is going to do to him. But what I think is interesting, and this is almost like a soapbox issue for me when it comes to the NFL, is other teams are going to be interested, and they should. The guy's a very, very talented guy. There's no doubt about it. But it seems like teams are being, I guess, penalized for doing the right thing and cutting him, which is what the 49ers did. And basically, it won't take long for another team to just go right out there and pick him up. That already happened with Junior Gled, who was waived by the Saints and then picked up by, you know, the Redskins. He's a great player, but the Saints tried to take the high road and saying, look, we don't want this kind of guy on our team. We want to set a good example, so let's waive him. But another team just picks him up and basically pays him less. And I don't really know what the answer is for that. It's just unfortunate for the teams that have a player like this. And the same goes for the 49ers, because it's going to be a huge pass rushing void for this team. Eric Mangini is going to rotate some young players. Aaron Lynch is going to fill the hole. Probably rookie Eli Harrell to get some reps at linebacker. But the 49ers are looking at a tough season anyway. It's just a very, very unfortunate season for the 49ers already, and it hasn't even started.
Yeah, and I mean, we are in the preseason, but when you combine this with the offseason that the 49ers had, you know, they have Harbaugh leave. You know, that was a very uncomfortable situation throughout the season last year anyway. But, you know, brand new coaching staff there. They did elevate Jim Tomsula, so, you know, they did promote from within for the head coach. But Chris Borland retires, Patrick Willis retires. You know, this was a defense that was already hurting, and now you took away another playmaker there for them. And you really have to wonder how they're able to, you know, bounce back from all of this. I mean, when you look at what they did over the offseason in free agency, it doesn't really seem like they addressed all of these needs. It looked like it was going to be a tough season for them anyway. And, you know, the thing about one of these suspensions, injuries, releases, you know, all these types of things, they don't just affect the side of the ball that the player plays. They affect the whole team. Because when you look at the 49ers, now you're going to ask Colin Kaepernick to drive them further down the field. You know, they don't have the safety net of Frank Gore anymore. So this is something that has a long reach in that locker room and on that football field. And you know, I really don't know how you overcome that when, you know, you can't really go out and sign anybody else that's going to fill the void.
Yeah, and no team's going to admit it, but look, the 49ers are rebuilding, and that's why I said technically it doesn't hurt. I mean, it hurts them because they lose a key player, but technically I didn't see them being a team that would do so well this year. We noticed the decline a little bit last year. They play in one of the toughest divisions in football. But what I'm anxious to see is, you know, of course, depending on what happens to Smith, there will be another team that will be willing to take a chance. And I think he can make an impact on a team, of course, if he's strained out, which is a big if at this point. But.
Yeah, and that's the sad part is, you know, I mentioned this to you earlier. I don't know if it's just the 24/7 news cycle with social media where, you know, nobody misses anything. But it seems like this past offseason, both at the NFL and at the collegiate level, a lot of guys getting in trouble. You know, I mean, you got a lot of guys with a lot of money, you know, a lot of friends, you know, a lot of connections, all these parties and off-season things. There are a lot of chances to get in trouble as a football player in the off-season. And it seems like this summer, more than most, you know, we've had a lot more occurrences of that.
Yeah, and, you know, there was a graph that I retweeted, and Mark Rosenberg put it out, about the players that got arrested for each team and how many, and it's really staggering. But, again, that to me is an overall problem, maybe in the NFL, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds in it because we like to focus on more fun, but it's really a problem that needs to be addressed because it's not only hurting teams but players, and it's a real-life issue, too, at the same time, so.
Yeah, it really is. It definitely is. And that's ultimately the biggest problem. You know, you look at guys like Josh Gordon, like Alden Smith, you know, they have issues that they need to take care of. And I don't know if the NFL is providing enough help for them, if it's there and they're not taking advantage of it. You know, I mean, that's obviously a discussion for another day. But, you know, it's something you have to walk into every offseason being cognizant of. You know, that's why it's important to know the depth of these teams, because you're going to have these situations that are, you know, directly going to impact your power ratings or perception of teams or their future prices. And, you know, it's just every offseason is like this, but this one certainly seems to have been a bit more harsh in that regard. So we'll move on from that topic. What else did you want to discuss here?
Chris Johnson, the Arizona Cardinals, they offered the contract. I think that's big news for a team that really needs some sort of running game. Chris Johnson's obviously a little long in the tooth, so to speak, especially for running backs. But before his 1,000-yard-plus season in 2013, which he averaged 3.9 yards per carry, he never averaged less than 4.0 yards per carry, even last year, 4.3 yards. Now, of course, his numbers went down from a yardage standpoint, but by comparison, the Cardinals averaged 3.29 yards last season, which was the lowest in the NFL, so anything would help. However, recent news that broke, I think just before we came on, is that right tackle Bobby Massey is now facing a 3-game suspension for violating the NFL policy and program for substances of abuse, which means now they're going to have some problems on the offensive line that they need to address as well. But overall, when I saw the Chris Johnson potential signing, because I haven't seen that official as of yet, I thought that was good news for an Arizona team that really needs a running game.
And this is an Arizona team that's exceptionally talented. I mean, they're a team, you know, with a head coach on there, Bruce Arians, that, you know, they are always competitive. You know, they've got a great home field advantage. We've talked about that in the past on this show. You know, they've got good wide receivers. Of course, Malcolm Floyd has also been hurt here in the preseason with some broken fingers. You know, Andre Ellington's been dinged up. So, you know, they're just looking for depth right now. And, of course, with Carson Palmer, you really don't know what he's going to look like coming back from a torn ACL in his mid to late 30s. A lot of questions for the Cardinals here on the offensive side of the ball. You don't really have to worry too much about the defense, but, you know, we always pay special attention to what's going on in the trenches because everybody knows about skilled players and quarterbacks from playing fantasy football. But it's those guys in the trenches that we pay a lot of attention to in this show, you know, because no running game is going to succeed without an offensive line. And, you know, I think that's something that people don't look at as much in their handicapping as they should.
Oh no, and you know, like you said, we love it. I mean, we love to look at that kind of stuff all the time. And when I saw the Chris Johnson potential signing for Arizona, I was like, well, this is a team that basically won football games late in the season with no offense whatsoever, no quarterback, no running game, nothing. They were still winning games just on how talented their defense was. So if they could keep Palmer healthy, get a guy like Chris Johnson who can run when given the opportunity, sky's the limit. But now that I see these things happening in the trenches, it's always big news to me. In fact, it's something more that I watch in preseason. I mean, people don't watch it during the regular season, but I watch it a lot not only in the regular season, but definitely in the preseason to see how deep a team is.
Well, and you mentioned the Cardinals and their complete lack of offense at the end of last year, and I know Ryan Lindley going to sign with your beloved New England Patriots. Matt Flynn, not healthy, never passed his physical. You know, they'll find out about Tom Brady this week and what will happen with the suspension. But, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, mixed returns in camp so far. But now with picking up Lindley, that's the guy that's going to be deciding your preseason wagers on the Patriots, and that seems like a pretty scary proposition at this point.
Well, you know, it really depends on how you want to look at it from a Patriots standpoint, I guess. Like you said, he wasn't healthy, Flynn, so it's a no-brainer to go pick somebody up, and you could at least argue that Lindley has some experience, although you and I are both very down on him and thinking about how he is. But on the flip side, it probably means the Patriots are pretty comfortable with Garoppolo and what he's been doing up to this point so far. But you're right. They might have to bring in more because, you know, preseason's coming to – you know, it depends on how many reps you're going to give Brady, which you normally wouldn't give Brady any reps in preseason anyway, or maybe one possession, although Belichick's been known to surprise and play him deeper than normal. But you'll definitely, again, if you're betting on a preseason game, you're going to be betting on that third-string quarterback, which now will be a guy that has had little time with this team to come out and try to make some noise.
Yeah, the Patriots, 3-point favorite for their preseason opener on Thursday night against the Packers. Any other news and notes before we get into some key topics that our NFL handicappers need to know about?
No, you know what? I think I'd go. I'm ready. Let's move on.
All right, so what we want to try to do here over these 4 weeks of preseason shows where we've got games is talk about some handicapping topics, some things that we're going to bring up a lot on this show, things that you're going to want to be aware of throughout the season. And I think one of the most basic, one of the most elementary to go with here on this episode is to talk about key numbers. And, you know, if you're an experienced handicapper, you know all about key numbers. You know about the value of them. But, you know, it is preseason, so it's not a bad time for a refresher. But traditionally, you'll get key numbers in the NFL, 3, 4, 6, 7. You know, those are the most common ones. You know, as you get into college, you'll get some key numbers in a sense that are higher up. You know, but for the NFL, it's a very tight market, lots of single-digit games. And, you know, Cole, let's just talk for a second here of the value of being above or below a key number. You know, that's something that we talk about all the time, specifically with our Super Contest card, to tease that again. But, yeah. You know, the value of getting -2.5 as opposed to -3 or -5.5 as opposed to 6, 6.5 opposed to 7, stuff like that, that's worth its weight in gold.
Oh, more than probably the general bettor would know, which is why you and I talk about this a lot. And look, we talk about it every week because every week we're talking about lines. So we always talk about when you lose your value, and usually that is when it surpasses a key number. That is why you'll see people bet earlier in the week. A lot of people bet when those numbers come open, especially the pros, because they know what number they want and they know where they want to get it at. So you're really taking a risk on some occasions if you're waiting for that to go around as far as moving over or under a key number, because you lose that value right away. And in the NFL, not only are the lines tight, but, of course, there's a lot of parity in the league. So every point counts, even when it's just a half a point.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, when you do see a number move through a key number, like you've got a team that goes from 2.5 to 3.5, that's pretty significant. In fact, that's very significant because, you know, you will get some professionals that are going to middle the number, hope for the game to land on 3, hit both bets, you know, may play 2.5, -2.5 or +3.5, a little bit heavier, you know, depending on which side they like more. So when you do have games that go through key numbers, also games that flip favorites, you know, where one team goes from -1 to +2, something like that, you know, those are moves to pay close attention to. But in terms of key numbers, we talked about a little bit already how they moved back the extra point may encourage some teams to go for 2 a little bit more. Do you think that we see the value of some key numbers kind of go down a little bit because of that rule change?
Well, you might actually see I'm not going to go out this far on a limb to say you're going to see different key numbers, but what I'll do is say that you might see more that are more important than others or some that are standing up. Maybe that 8 plays a bigger role with this 2-point conversion possibility of an increase from that standpoint. But that's nothing I would jump to, obviously, right out the gate. But the key that you brought up that I really want to hammer home is that, you know, when we talk about key numbers, this is a very basic concept of handicapping, but it really branches out to other concepts that are more advanced, like the middle that you talked about. And it's, if you don't know the basics, if you don't know the key number movements, it's hard to understand other things, because essentially the bottom line is, you just want to make money as a football handicapper, and that is by finding your value. So to me, you bring up a very, very good point with the new extra point distance, because once you get one missed extra point, then kind of like college football and any other realm you talk about, that two-point conversion becomes more of a question mark when you go for it and what kind of effect it will have later in the game. So I think that will lead us to maybe seeing some key numbers maybe less in their value, maybe some new ones showing up, but I'm not fully ready to commit to it until I see it play out just yet.
And, you know, I think that's an important point to make, that you don't really want to commit to a stance regarding key numbers, because it's not just the handicappers that have to figure this out. It's the odds makers as well. You know, this is uncharted territory for them. You really don't know how it's going to play out. It may not affect many games at all. You know, I mean, maybe teams just decide to take that extra point. You know, I mean, by and large, NFL kickers are pretty automatic, you know, from 33 yards out. But that being said, you know, we try to talk about it a little bit on this show when we can, but weather may become a bigger factor in games now, because if you've got some swirling winds, you know, wet field conditions, something like that, you know, maybe you consider running the ball, going for two, as opposed to trying to kick that extra point. So, you know, I'm really curious to see how the odds makers approach it as well. And I think maybe that may be the best way to go about it, is wait and see how they do it first, and then you can adjust from that. Because, you know, I mean, really they're not all too worried about it in the preseason. And, you know, you see that with a lot of the numbers, most of them just hovering around the home team minus three. But, you know, I am curious to see if there are any adjustments made, you know, from week one to week two, and then looking from weeks one and two to weeks, say, eight and nine.
Well, and I noticed already in the first preseason game, there was a couple, you know, fourth and shorts they went for. Now, granted, they would have been field goals, not extra points, but it just showed preseason, they were like, hey, let's try out our short, you know, goal line offense, even though for the Steelers at the time, I believe, we're going for it on fourth and one, probably about the Steelers 20. But not only does that talk about teams trying new things in preseason, but I think a lot of that has to do with this is what we do in two-point conversions, you know, because the Steelers went for it on a very short and goal-to-go situation, and I think it was around the 2-3-yard line, and not only were they trying to get a touchdown, sure, but that also sets up for we really have to work on our goal-to-goal situation, because that is where our two-point conversions are going to come from. And, of course, then they go out and get an injured kicker, which, again, will play a role in their extra point, and the extra point they did kick looked a little shaky. So I think it's going to play a big role, not only with key numbers, but with betting in general this year.
Yeah, so like I said, we're going to try and cover some of these topics throughout our first four shows here, with key numbers being one of the most basic. And as Cole said, you know, one of the things about key numbers is that it branches off into a lot of different areas of interest for handicappers. So, you know, we'll try and have you up to speed on those. Of course, it'll be a lot easier to understand those, if you're lost in the weeds a little bit. It'll be easier to understand those once we get, you know, regular season game lines to talk about, because, you know, it's not really worthwhile to talk about key numbers as it pertains to the preseason, I don't think. But we'll get into some preseason lines here. We have seen one number move off of the key number of three down to 2.5, at least at BetOnline. I don't know if they're just mirroring the rest of the market since BetOnline opened first, or there's been some Tennessee money on this game. But the Titans take on the Falcons. Marcus Mariota's NFL debut here, Dan Quinn's NFL head coaching debut for the Atlanta Falcons. So a lot to pay attention to in this game, and that's why I picked it, because I think that this is one of the games that has more intrigue than most of the others.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's Tom, obviously Mariota. What I like is so far what I've seen in camp or read in camp is that Ken Whisenhunt appears to be following through on what he said earlier this year, that he's going to bring some of that Oregon offense into the playbook this year for the Titans. And just seeing him in training camp already the last couple of weeks, he's done plenty of snaps where he's had to execute or fake the zone replay that pretty much was the bread and butter of what he ran at Oregon the last three seasons. So to me, he's already going out of his way to make things very comfortable for the rookie quarterback and make sure he has a good first season or as good as possible. On the other side of the ball, the Atlanta Falcons, of course, I want to watch the defense. Dan Quinn, he's known for his defense. He comes in there. The Falcons definitely need help on defense. Who I'll be watching for this game, rookie first-round draft pick Vic Beasley Jr. He's listed as the starter at defensive end, along with Tyson Jackson, and free agent addition Adrian Claiborne is behind him. They talked about how they're going to be sending waves. I just read that today as far as pass rushers go, and that's defensive line coach Brian Cox who's doing that, so you know he likes to send people after the quarterback. So it'll be fun to watch a young rookie quarterback developing under one, in my opinion, of the better quarterback coaches that we've seen in a little bit against a defense that's trying to get a name for themselves under one of the better defensive coaches we've seen in a little bit.
Yeah, this is a very fascinating game. And these are two fascinating teams for the regular season. I expect the Falcons to be a lot better than the Titans. I think the Falcons have a great shot at winning the NFC South because I do believe in Dan Quinn's ability to turn this defense around. But to look some more at the Titans here, you know, what do you think the rest of the team's mindset is with how much Wisenhunt is trying to cater to Marcus Mariota? Now, on one hand, you can say that he's trying to set him up to succeed, giving him something that he's comfortable with. On the other hand, you know, there are some veteran guys on this Titans team, not a whole lot of them. This is one of the youngest teams in the NFL, very, very young offensive line. You know, so maybe there aren't too many guys that are going to have a say about this, but, you know, it is something that could rub a locker room the wrong way, you know, that Mariota comes in here as the golden boy, and here's Wisenhunt, you know, changing what he's done his whole career just to cater to this rookie.
Well, and that's why I want to see how much he actually throws this in. I don't think it'll be a lot. I think it'll be enough to get him comfortable. But truth be told, if you're going to do anything to help a quarterback, running an Oregon type of offense isn't going to hurt, because almost like when Chip Kelly came to the NFL, before his players got exhausted from running all over the field, they talked about how much they enjoyed that kind of offense because it was high speed, everybody was getting a chance at the ball, and of course it was high scoring. So I don't think in this case it will be a bad thing. Plus, like you said, they're all young. So although I'm sure some of them are selfish and I'm sure some of them want the attention that Mariota is getting, it's really all about winning, and they're optimistic. They're not even old enough to realize probably how bad they are at this point. So I think this is a team that's headed in a positive direction, mainly because they can't get any worse, really, than they have been recently. So to me, it's just about developing the players, and the first person you want to start with is your leader, is your quarterback. So as of right now, to me, at least, putting in a few plays, good for Mariota. It's going to make him comfortable. Good for the offense overall, which is good for the Titans overall.
Well, let's look a little bit more at the Falcons here for this game, because Dan Quinn, you know, remains to be seen what he's going to look like offensively. But the pieces are certainly here for this team. You've got Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Roddy White, you know, a lot of talent there. But they have had some injuries here in training camp thus far. And I think this is part of the reason why this line is under 3. Because Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman, both dealing with hamstring problems, neither one expected to play. Coleman, their third-round pick out of Indiana. You know, so they probably won't have too much of a running game in this one. You know, you may see Matt Ryan for a series, if that. So it'll come down to T.J. Yates and Sean Renfrey. So, you know, I think I can understand why this number is going under 3. However, as we've talked about with rookie head coaches, they really try to make a statement by winning in the preseason. And Dan Quinn, a guy who's accustomed to winning, you have to figure that he's taking these preseason games pretty seriously.
I would think so. I would think so. And I don't see why he wouldn't want to win, especially because not only do rookie head coaches want to win right away, but he wants his team to start believing in themselves. But what I'm going to look for on this Atlanta offensive side is they worked a lot out of the two tight end set. From what I've seen, especially early in downs. Now they brought in Jacob Tammy, good tight end blocker, Tony Moliaki. So we'll see a lot of them. What I want to see, if that's something they go to, because not only should it provide a little more protection for Matt Ryan, which of course he was lacking last year on offense, but it also gives him a chance to have another safety blanket like he did in Tony Gonzalez. So I think that will be a big thing for him, because we know Roddy White and Julio Jones and all, and the other weapons that he has are up to the challenge. It's just a matter of A, giving him time, and B, giving him a little more security blanket, especially with the running back situations that they've had there for in Atlanta for a little bit. So for me, from an offensive standpoint, I want to see them almost more than a defensive standpoint, because I believe, like you, that they'll be improved on defense. So I want to see if they can make up for those inadequacies that they had on offense. Now, as far as winning goes, you're right. I mean, to me, Ken Whisenhunt, you know, his preseason record about 10-19 last time I checked. So it'll be a matter of who wants to win more. I always lean to a rookie coach when I see who wants to win more. Although you can argue that, you know, the Titans depth chart, you know, Mariota, Mettenberger, and, you know, Charlie Whitehurst, who I know you love, isn't necessarily the worst one as far as the depth chart is concerned. So it's something to watch. Of course, this isn't something I'm going to, you know, bet on. If I was going to bet on a preseason game, it certainly wouldn't be this one, but I would lean Atlanta just because they're the better team.
I think it's a great point you bring up about the two tight end set. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan, who was the Browns offensive coordinator, he really cobbled together a pretty decent Browns offense over the first half of the year. You know, Brian Hoyer, from an efficiency standpoint, wasn't very good, but they got the running game going. You know, they were able to move the football. Shanahan has a lot more toys to play with in Atlanta. So, you know, going with that two tight end set, you can occupy a safety. You make them choose between giving safety help to, you know, Julio Jones' side of the field, you know, or maybe you hope for a bounce back year from Roddy White. And another guy to watch for Atlanta, a tremendous wide receiver out of East Carolina, is Justin Hardy. Hardy caught everything thrown in his direction in college. And I think he's a guy that could have a very, very big year in this Atlanta offense. So move on from that game. Look at the Broncos and the Seahawks here. This is another compelling game because you've got two teams that, on the whole, don't have a whole lot of questions at their starting positions. However, the Broncos have as many as three offensive linemen with no NFL starting experience listed at the top of the depth chart, at least according to the beat writers out there. So that will be something to watch very closely in this game. This one also has the biggest spread of the week. Seattle was 5.5-6 when I looked yesterday. They're 4.5-point favorite at home today.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Of course, I love offensive linemen, and you're right. They have a center in Matt Paradis, left guard Max Garcia, and left tackle Ty Samborillo, with zero combined games of NFL experience in the starting lineup. That is huge for more than a couple reasons. First of all, you have Peyton Manning, who's coming off, you know, an injury play season. Plus, Gary Kubiak's now there. So it's going to be a new offense, a West Coast offense. You're going to see Manning in the pistol more. You're going to see Manning moving around a bit more. But one thing you don't want to see is Manning in a lot for preseason, which he probably won't be. So right away, if you're thinking about taking the Broncos in points, then you're really going to, you know, be putting your money on Brock Osweiler for most of the part of it. Because the Broncos, like you said, no major roster questions. Two of the biggest, probably special teams, punt returner, maybe kicker. But to me, if this is the kind of game you're looking for to see stars, you're not going to see them long. They're going to be out. And plus, the Seahawks are just like Denver. They have some questions on the offensive line, too. Alvin Bailey appears to be the front runner at left guard, but it's much tighter at center. They're adjusting a few centers around Lemuel, Jean-Pierre, and Drew Nowak. Of course, they're competing to replace Max Unger, who was traded in the Jimmy Graham trade. So to me, if you're watching Seattle versus Denver, you're probably not going to be excited over a lot of things, but this is exactly the kind of game I want to watch, because these are two teams that could potentially win the Super Bowl, and if those offensive lines are not working out, they're going to be falling down on my list.
See, and that's what I love about this show is, yeah, it's a game that on name recognition, people go, oh, I want to watch that. And then as they start realizing, hey, Peyton Manning's not going to play, Russell Wilson, who knows if he'll play. I doubt Marshawn Lynch plays in this. You know, as they start seeing the stars get, you know, checked off that they're not playing, they're not going to pay attention to it. This is exactly the reason why you should pay attention to it. Because as Cole just said, these are two teams capable of winning the Super Bowl. Super Bowl winning teams do not go through the whole season without having to use their depth. It just doesn't happen. So this is exactly why you want to pay attention to a game like this, to see what these teams have behind the starters. And, you know, looking at Denver specifically, you look at them in the 3-4 defense here. Danny Trevathan, he's been hurt almost every year. Von Miller was hurt last year. You know, DeMarcus Ware is a guy that they don't want to get hurt. You know, so you're going to be able to see the Denver's depth on defense. And I think that's critically important, you know, so that you can know when you're taking these teams that are going to be laying big points throughout the season, you're going to know that if somebody gets hurt throughout the game, there's a competent replacement waiting to come in.
Right, and that's why if some of these guys don't work out on the offensive line, especially, let's say, in their first quarter of this preseason game, you have to wonder how long they're going to keep them in there. And if they do keep them in there longer, you have to wonder if it's because their backups aren't suitable. So then you're going to see guys coming in behind them, and you're going to have to adjust to see how well these guys are playing, because if there's no depth in these positions, both on offense and defense, then it's going to raise some eyebrows. It should put some question marks for both these teams. So Seattle, for example, Cam Chancellor's hold out second week right now. Deion Bailey, he's emerged as a player to watch as Seattle considers different alternatives at strong safety. So, again, watch that depth. There's no doubt in my mind that Cam Chancellor will be back sooner or later. So he will be back, won't be a problem. But this is where you get to watch that depth. You also get to wonder about maybe how the teams are going to do during the regular season because of that. And, of course, you pick up different tidbits and notes. You know, today, you know, I found that the Seahawks this year will play four teams that are coming off a bye week, which is the most of any team in the league. So this is a team that's got to be deep as can be because they're going to be playing a lot of well-rested teams.
Excellent point. That's probably going to wind up being the best point of the show. That's a great find by you. Gary Kubiak, 18-13 in the preseason. Pete Carroll, he checks in at 13-7. They had back-to-back 4-0 preseasons, and they were 2-2 last year. That's not really a big surprise because Seattle was trying to find some things out in 2012 and then still early in 2013. And then last year, you know, Pete Carroll knew what he had, so he was able to take it a little bit easier in the preseason. Meanwhile, a new head coach in Denver and Kubiak, you know, so maybe he puts a little bit more emphasis into this game. So I think right now I would take Denver in the points just because, you know, I mean, a preseason game with a spread – anywhere north of 3, you know, you take a pretty long, hard look at it. And I think when you look at all the intangibles and variables in this game, I think I like Denver. So we'll move on to the last game we're going to talk about here, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Super Contest to finish up the show. If you are listening live, you'll have to download the podcast because we're going to stop streaming live here in about 3 minutes. But I want to look at this game between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Minnesota Vikings. Now, the Vikings, one of two teams that will play 5 preseason games this year, the Steelers, of course, being the other one from the Hall of Fame game. So that sort of changes up the game plan for Minnesota a little bit. You know, it'll be interesting to see if they use the third game or the fourth game as their dress rehearsal. But Mike Zimmer, 5-0 in the preseason now, taking on a Bucs team with rookie Jameis Winston at quarterback.
Well, and I really think after the first game against the Steelers, Zimmer has been quoted as saying in the press conference, he really liked how physical Minnesota was in that game. He gave the team an extra day off Monday, and then, of course, they're going to be hosting their first preseason opener against Winston. Winston doesn't look bad at all in the preseason. He's found the end zone a total of 9 times by working the red zone. He had only one interception, total of 14 touchdowns, just 2 interceptions over the past 2 days. But as we know, the preseason is a different animal because you're playing at a higher speed. You're also going against players who are trying to make the team, trying to make a difference as a starter. So they do play a lot harder, even later in the game, if you're looking for guys who'd rather, you know, be playing NFL football than working at FedEx per se. But I really think the Vikings have an edge with that extra game. Because now Teddy Bridgewater played flawlessly in one possession against the Steelers. Does he play 2? And even if he doesn't, now you've got backups that have played it, you know, longer already, and they're already familiar with what to see in live game action where Tampa Bay is still adjusting to that kind of action. Tampa Bay, to me, is going to be improved this year. They're going to be a better team, but this is going to be a very tough game for them to come out and win, mainly because you got yourself a rookie quarterback, and you got a guy in Zimmer that, as you mentioned, likes to win in the preseason.
Yeah, the Vikings, 3.5-point favorite for this game, and you know, I'm always curious to see what happens with these rookie quarterbacks in their first preseason game, especially a kid like Winston, who, you know, he's going to have that internal clock that's not going to be up to NFL speed yet, and his first instinct is going to be to run. You know, it's what he did in college. Last year, he spent way too much time throwing into double and triple coverage and, you know, turned the ball over a ton in the ACC. But with a guy like that, you really don't want him going out there running around, especially against the Vikings defense that's very tough, very physical. So I really want to see how Lovie Smith handles Jameis Winston in this one, because I think it'll give you an idea of how he'll handle him throughout the preseason. You know, does he give him that leeway to use his legs if he wants? Does he make him hand the ball off, some quick throws, hot routes, things of that sort? You know, because not only are we talking about a kid that's never played at the NFL level before, but, You know, I mean, he was big man on campus at Florida State. He could do whatever he wanted with the offense. He doesn't have that type of freedom now with Tampa Bay. So that'll be something I want to watch for as well.
Yeah, and I'll be watching rookie wide receiver Kenny Bell. He looked great in camp. I think they look to get him a few catches if possible. But I think you're right. They're going to come out with a safe kind of game plan. Actually, it's what the Steelers, at least in my opinion, did for Landry Jones last week. They let him do safe, small passes, screen passes, just to get the rhythm before they let him open it up later in the game. I think you're going to see that with Winston. And if he starts taking any kind of hits, either they're going to go a little bit more towards the run to set up the pass, or they're going to keep it short because the last thing they want him to do is run and get hurt, especially against a physical Minnesota defense. Again, not a game I would touch, but if I would, for me, it'd be Minnesota.
Well, it's some interesting things on the Tampa Bay offensive line. Donovan Smith listed as the starter at left tackle, so he'll be protecting Jameis Winston's blind side. Ellie Marpet, who was taken out of Hobart, he was a surprise pick off the board, actually, but it was an impressive display of scouting from Tampa Bay, not listed as the starter at right guard. That currently belongs to Garrett Gilkey. But Marpet will play a whole lot in this game, whether it's with the first team or the second team. But here we are again, another team with a young offensive line, a young offense as a whole, really. So it's always interesting to see how coaches approach these games because, you know, you want these guys to learn, you want these guys to make mistakes in the preseason when it doesn't matter. But at the same time, these guys are all key parts of your offense for the regular season that you don't want to lose. So I like to see how coaches deal with that delicate balance. Of course, Lovie Smith, a little bit easier for him. This will be his 45th preseason game as a head coach. But when you do get some of these games with less experienced head coaches, you know, we saw it last year with Gus Bradley dealing with Blake Bortles. You know, it's always interesting to see how these guys are going to handle these situations. And it's something you really need to pay attention to if you want to bet on the preseason.
And like you said, Lovie Smith, 22-22 in preseason, 1-3 last year. He's pretty secure in his job. But that shows me that he likes to work on fundamentals. He likes to work on situations in games. So for him, it's probably not as much about winning. The Vikings had some bright spots, and I think they'll want to do some different things with what they saw. I haven't heard, but I doubt you'll see Adrian Peterson in this game. Bridgewater maybe for one possession, maybe a little longer. And then I think they'll be important to watch, just like the Steelers. They're a whole different animal because they had that extra game on when they'll actually have their full rehearsal and when they'll actually start letting their players ride the bench for most of the preseason.
Well, it's good to talk about some lines. We didn't talk about any line moves this week because it's the preseason and, you know, all line moves are going to be predicated on what the coaches say about playing time. But, you know, we will be talking about games, obviously, during our regular season shows. We'll be forecasting line moves, telling you where we think numbers are going to go. So we'll have a lot of great stuff with that this year. That's one of the benefits of doing the show on Tuesday. But one of our favorite segments is going to be the Westgate Super Contest. If you're unfamiliar with this, it is a fantastic event. $1,500 buy-in. You pick five NFL games against the spread. The spreads come out on Wednesday. The numbers do not move. So, you know, depending on what happens between Wednesday and when picks are due, you know, you can certainly get points of value if there's an injury or something like that. This year, doing the show on Tuesdays, we won't have the numbers for the official Super Contest card when we record the show, but we will go over all of our thoughts, and it's something that we take a lot of pride in and work really diligently at.
Oh, it's exciting. And for those that weren't around last year to hear us go back and forth on who we like and who we don't like, that's always entertaining as well because right out the gate, usually there's a few teams that we agree on and then we'll go back and forth and we'll try to get as many picks as ready for that Tuesday show. And, of course, you can follow both of us on Twitter to get the rest of them by the time Friday rolls around. But we look forward to a great season on it, and it's always fun going back and forth on who we like and who we don't. And again, it's a different animal, so the strategies are different with the lines. You're actually competing against other people in the standings to try to, you know, finish in the money. But there's one thing for sure, it's always a good, good time.
Yeah, and speaking of finishing in the money, a lot of money at stake in this. Last year's champion, I believe $750,000 was what they won for winning this thing. And they posted a 64-20-1 record, which is just
amazing.
Ridiculous. We were 46-39 with our entry last year, which, you know, frankly, I thought was pretty good. I mean, it was our first year in the contest. You know, there are different strategies to it because the lines don't move, you know, because you've only got the five plays. there are different ways to go about, trying to go contrarian, trying to make sure that you don't match the field, all that kind of thing. It really is, it's a game, frankly. It's a game that's very, very hard to play with high stakes. And, we had a ton of fun with it last year, and I'm definitely excited to do it again.
Oh, yeah, and you mentioned the winners and the kind of record they post. That shows you how competitive it is. And it's like that year in and year out. And that's why, look, I agree with you. Our record wasn't bad at all, especially for our first year as a team with, two handicappers who have different approaches, but obviously have a good chemistry as far as, getting on the right page with these kind of things. We didn't have a bad season at all, yet we were still out of money. So we have to do even better this year, and that's our goal.
Yeah, it is, and that'll be something that you can follow along with us throughout the season. Last year, our entry was Bang the Book 2. I don't know if we'll have the same entry name this year or not, but, sign-ups are coming up later in the month of August. It's a whole big to-do out there with lots of handicappers from around the country. So, it's definitely something to pay close attention to, and we'll help you along throughout the season with our picks. And then, of course, if you want to see how you do alongside us, you can tweet at us at Bang the Book. At Skating Tripods is myself, at Cole Ryan 9 is Cole. So, go ahead and tweet trash talk at us or whatever else you want to do throughout the season. A lot of things that we've got covered here. Of course, we've got 3 more weeks of the preseason to smooth out the rough edges of this show, and get back into our midseason rhythm from last year. But, Cole, any final thoughts from you?
No, just I can't wait for the season again. I can't wait for preseason football. And again, as you mentioned, the show is going to have some different features than we had from last year. So please chime on in on what you like, what you want to hear, because the show is all about you. And our goal is to educate and entertain, and we're here to do it again this year.
I do have a couple of gifts for those of you that are still listening here at this point of the show. Head on over to bangthebook.com, go to our sportsbook reviews. Look at the one for BetDSI. It's Diamond Sportsbook. Use the promo code BANG300 and get up to a 300% deposit bonus. And then the other gift, a shameless plug for me, for the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast every Monday and Thursday here at bangthebook.com. So make sure that you check that out. In a couple of weeks, I'll be back on with Kyle Hunter for the College Football Podcast. We'll try to record that on Mondays this year. So we'll get a head start on that a couple of weeks before the season begins so that we can have you up to speed. So that'll do it for us today. For Cole Ryan, I'm Adam Burke. Hope you enjoyed the show, everybody, and we'll talk to you again next week.